Welcome to The Learning Curve with Roger and Virginia. The Learning Curve is about helping kids get good grades in school and succeeding in life. It's for all you parents, teachers and students, as all of life is a learning curve and you succeed in life to the degree that you can learn easily. Today's guest is Marina Rubin. She's the author of the book How to Tutor Your Own Child. And this is important information. Marina gives us the 6-step method you can use in successfully tutoring your child yourself. As we often say in the learning curve, you parents are your child's first and best teacher. To get more information on the material we cover in our shows, you can go to howtolearneasily.com, or if you have any question you'd like to ask of us, simply email us at questions@howtolearneasily.com.
We're speaking with Marina Kessler Rubin. She is an in-house writing tutor for Sidwell Friends School in Washington, D.C. She is also the author of a new book that has just been released, How to Tutor Your Own Child, Boost Grades, and Inspire a Lifelong Love of Learning Without Paying for a Professional Tutor. Melissa, where would people be able to get your book?
Thank you for having me on your show. And the best place to get my book would be either your local Barnes & Noble, or you can get it online through Amazon or a number of other distributors, including IndieBound and Barnes & Noble and Amazon websites. It's available in digital form as well for Kindle or for other digital readers.
Now, when you can get it, the folks can get it from your own website as well. You better give them that web address, Marina.
They can. It's marinarubin.com. That's MarinaRubin.
Good. .com,
and they can click buy the book and they'll have a number of options from that page.
So I'm curious, what inspired you to write this book?
Well, I've been working as a professional tutor for many years in the Washington, D.C. and Baltimore areas, and I saw that many parents were delegating out their own academic involvement with their children to outside tutors. And while I do think there are some cases where that's appropriate, a lot of these parents seem to be doing it because they didn't feel empowered to work with their own children themselves. It seemed like they thought there was something mysterious going on in the relationship between the child and the tutor. And part of my motivation is to make sure that parents understand that they can work with their own children. There are so many ways that they can academically or intellectually stimulate their own children, whether they're doing so informally, whether they're doing so just in their daily lives, or if they're sitting down and working with their children at a desk for homework help. They should feel confident in working with their own children.
Can you give us some specific examples, perhaps, of how parents can do this?
It may be as easy as talking to your child about what you're reading. Do you read the newspaper? Do you have a favorite author? Does your child know that you read that newspaper and have that favorite author? Do you ever talk to them about the articles that you're reading that are most interesting or that have really relevant current events that your child might find interesting? So it may be that simple, just engaging them in what you are already doing. It may be that you take them to museums or art galleries or historical sites that are in your area or are near vacation sites that you're already going to. If you're going to Disney World, is there a historical site near Orlando that might be related to something they're studying in history? Just thinking a little bit outside the box in that way.
It sounds a lot like what homeschoolers do.
Yes. Definitely. I think homeschoolers are already keyed into this mindset, and they are looking for opportunities for everyday learning that they can share with their children. And I think that parents who are sending their children to a more traditional mainstream school setting can use a lot of the same techniques that homeschoolers use and can find ways to engage their children when they're at home and engage them in things that might be related to the curriculum that they already are following at their school, or might be something that's just an outside interest or a passion for the parent. Maybe they're sharing gardening information with their child, and therefore giving them more motivation to learn about what's in their biology class, to understand photosynthesis, because they now understand how plants grow.
That's very good. Actually, you set a nice example there. We find that when parents are involved in the education of their children, various critical things occur. The first one of which is the parent actually sets the standards of expectation for the child and the levels of curiosity and the application of the knowledge that they can learn. And the parent sets these examples that the child benefits from. And you've expressed that nicely in the way in which you give the examples of how parents quite easily and naturally coaching and tutoring their children without making it such a hugely formal exercise.
Right, and then it becomes more about showing your child that you're interested in having them learn, as opposed to the expectation being, I want you to get a good grade. When you're able to engage your child on this day-to-day level, you're sending them a different message about what your expectations are, and you're really showing them that what you want is for them to be passionate about learning.
It also imparts in the child something that we found very important, and that is having the child realize what the value and use of the information is that's available to them, so they do get engaged in wanting to learn it. One of the great big study barriers we find, certainly in young children, is if they see no reason for paying attention to a subject, if they see no value in the subject, the end result is they don't pay any attention to it. So parents certainly do have a big role in that point.
Right. I think the biggest point that I want people to take away from this book is that if they do nothing else, they should be trying to inspire a passion for learning in their children and a passion for education. Because you're completely right. If the child is not interested, then it doesn't matter how much information the school places in front of them or you place in front of them. They have to really want to get engaged in something or to hook their minds onto something. And you as a parent don't even have to model that you love the subject they're studying. You don't have to love multiplication or love physics or love phonics. But if you show them that you love something and that it has to do with learning, they'll see that that's a trait that is important, and they'll eventually hook onto something themselves.
I'd like to go back to what you said about helping your child with their curriculum by, as you said, with gardening, that you would get into, maybe they're into biology or they're learning about plants and they're learning about the insects maybe. And it's very interesting you should say something like that, because that is very much one of the principles in Montessori, is also called the teachable moment. And you look for these moments when the child is engaged in something and they are curious and interested in something, and you show them that there is a wider world. There are so many tangent paths you can go down on a subject that leads into so many other skills and areas of knowledge.
Yes, I completely understand what you're saying and agree with the importance of teachable moments, because I think that this is something that the traditional school systems don't have the luxury to do, because they're dealing with so many students at once. They can't spot a child's individual passion all the time and allow them to build their academic skills through that interest. They have to just cater what's going on to the average child. So you as a parent have an advantage in that you can see that your child may be incredibly passionate about bicycling, and then you have the opportunity to create your own math problems, for example, that have to do with how far somebody biked, or to teach geography by talking about how far a bicyclist might need to go to get to a certain location in another state. So you can teach any of those essential skills that a school might be teaching, or you can supplement what your school is teaching by being aware of what makes your child really enthusiastic and building on those teachable moments, as you said.
Absolutely. And what came to mind for me was to look at, well, what are the mechanics involved in making a bicycle run? And that's physics. What happens if my child does not want me to help them or tutor them or be with them at all when they're doing their homework? They want to be left alone, or I'll figure it out, Mom, I want to do it with my friends.
Right. I think that's fine. And if your child would prefer to work independently, I think there is nothing wrong with that, as long as both you and the child are satisfied with the way that his work is going or her work is going. I think, therefore, the parent's role as a tutor can come in a slightly different form. So it can be more supplemental as opposed to being directly engaged with homework itself. A parent can ask a child what's going on in school if the child's in a traditional school system and get engaged in conversation about that subject. So what did you learn in history today? Oh, what did you learn about the Revolutionary War? How does that relate to where we are? How does that relate to our family history? The parent can pick up on what the child is doing in school and for homework and just build on that independently.
In your book, Marina, or in your consulting with parents as tutors, have you come across any issues that you had to help parents overcome so they could feel confident that they could tutor successfully? I mean, one of the things that we ran into recently with another guest was the point that the parent is the child's first and best teacher. And I think that it behooves us as professionals to have parents feeling very comfortable that they can and ought be doing this.
I think that something that I've seen parents struggle with is understanding that it's okay to be more creative in the ways that they teach their children.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to sit at a desk with their child. They certainly can sit next to them at a desk looking at a textbook, but they should feel comfortable and confident moving around while they teach, studying while they walk, perhaps going mm-hmm. for walks with their child and quizzing them or just talking to them as they walk, running around. I mean, I've worked with families where the children have a lot of energy and actually learn best while moving quickly. So they learn best by reciting multiplication tables while running up and down the stairs and saying 2, 4, 6, 8 as they step on each step. And there's nothing wrong with doing that, even though traditionally maybe we sit down with flashcards and look at them. There's nothing wrong with changing the way you have your child learn.
It actually helps if they can be physically involved, by the way.
Right.
Actually, as far as, well, the world has called it dyslexia, but we've had a guest on that now has re-educated us, and they call it 3D learning, because these are kids who learn in 3D pictures. And they have found that when they have the child moving, walking or running up and down the stairs, you said, or just running in place, and they are being, I don't want to say be given information, but they're reviewing multiplication facts and things like that, the kids pick it up, because by moving, they're able to, somehow free up their mind a bit and able to absorb the knowledge. So it's very interesting what you just said.
Yeah, I can imagine reciting the multiplication tables running up and down stairs. That'd be rather good.
Yep. Yes, and there's a good program that I've heard of called Math and Movement that I believe was founded by Susie Koontz, K-O-O-N-T-Z. Yes. And I believe that encourages a lot of movement and skip counting and special movements that help you help children remember a lot of their math facts. So I would recommend that parents look into that if they're interested.
Marina, I struck something on your website that caught my attention that I think our listeners will be very interested in from and will benefit. I'll read the paragraph from your website. It says here, Ruben's accessible guide shows you how to balance big picture curiosity with the academic nitty-gritty of homework, assignments, organization, and electronic resources. Building on her proven 6-step session format. Now tell us about this.
This is a format that I think is useful if you want to have a set time when you sit down with your child and work through the material that they're looking at school. So it's a slightly more structured setup for parents who would prefer that method. And there are 6 simple steps to it. The first is that you signal your undivided attention. You make sure your child knows that you're paying attention to what's going on right there at the table and not your cell phone, not your computer, nothing that's distracting you. Mm-hmm. The second is you greet the child or somehow show that you are engaged and interested in sitting there and working together. Then there's a series of 3 questions that are steps 3, 4, and 5. Step 3 is what's new? So you want to talk to your child about what's new in their schoolwork. What have they learned recently? Do they want to talk about it? What have they done in math class, in history class? Basically, what have they done since you last spoke with them about their work? Step 4 is what's now? What do you want to accomplish right now as we're sitting here, as you're working on your homework? And you get into the work right after you've talked about what's now, and the child works on something either independently or with your assistance, and then you follow that up with step five, what's next. That is when you're finding out what your child's upcoming goals are, what they need to do in future days, do they have any big projects. It's just helping them think a little bit longer term and plan for what's coming up. And then step six is quit while you're ahead. And that means, quit while you're ahead means knowing when to stop and realize that you've maximized what you're going to get out of the session and you're leaving things in a good place with a student.
With the what's new question, one of the things that we bring up in our book is that when new information is introduced to the child, we like to make sure, or we urge parents and teachers to be sure that definitions are given for any new words or symbols that they're being introduced to. Is that something that is perhaps in your step there?
That's definitely the place where that would be appropriate. I think as a child is explaining what's new and what they've recently learned, the parent should be responding by asking the child to elaborate a little bit to be sure that the child really understands what they're saying they learned in school that day. An example that I have in the book is I was working with a child who had read the book Things Fall Apart by Chinua Achebe, and she read the whole book thinking, it turned out, that the word missionaries meant mercenaries.
Oh.
And I didn't find this out till she finished the book, because I actually had never thought to ask her, and I know her parents hadn't asked her either. Nobody was really questioning her when she would summarize what she was reading each day. Nobody really asked her if she understood what the word missionary meant. And I think that really reinforced for me the importance of making sure your child understands definitions and concepts that they're being exposed to.
In fact, even more important is to make sure that they don't go past any words, and that you as a tutor don't use any words, or the child does not have or is not given the correct definition for. One of the barriers to comprehension we found is that when a child collides with words for which there is no definition given them, or they don't get, they actually go mentally blank. Monstrous mind fog turns on, and they actually become immobile. It's tremendously crippling.
Right. You want to have something that your child can connect with, or connect to a set of previous knowledge that they've been exposed to. And you're right, I think if they have no frame of reference for a concept, they're not really going to retain it.
In your what's next step, I was curious, how would you coach or suggest that a parent ensure that the child isn't taking too large a chunk? In other words, that they're following in the proper gradient of, I'm going to set a goal, but it is a goal that really is achievable, or is it the proper gradient for them to achieve that goal?
I guess I'd say that you have to know your child and your child's track record. If they've previously given themselves this large a chunk of work to do by a certain time and not been able to handle it or been overwhelmed, then I think you need to break down the task into smaller steps or help them do that. And think perhaps time-wise. So if your child says that they have a paper due on Friday and it's Monday, you can break down the steps with them and say, okay, to write a rough draft, how long do you think that'll take you, and how many days will you need to be able to make sure you have that amount of time? And if that's too big a concept to think about and figure out, you can even break it down more than that. How long do you think it'll take you to write each paragraph? Or how long do you think it'll take you to outline your topic sentences? And you just break big work down into the smallest manageable pieces, and then figure out what your timeline needs to be.
Actually, the other point on this gradients thing that we find is that one also needs to break subjects down into the smaller learnable parts and teach them in the correct order. For example, you wouldn't be trying to teach somebody calculus or logarithms or something before they've actually got in their basic mathematics. For higher levels of knowledge, one needs to, as you said earlier, they need to have the lower gradient terms of reference. I see one of the things in your book, the chapter is called Put It on the World, on the Wall, Living the Parent-Tutor Lifestyle. Now that sounds exciting to me. What's this all about?
This chapter focuses on ways that families can use the physical space in their homes to maximize their children's educational benefits. So a lot of people have a lot of wall space, for example, and students now often use Facebook where they have a virtual wall. And I feel like every child should have a physical wall where they also get to express themselves and post information or decorate. So I think that parents should think about what's currently on your child's wall. Is there any way that you can put up chalkboard paint or a whiteboard or a magnetic board so that they can use magnet letters, foreign language magnets, even magnetic puppet theater? You can find anyone from Dickinson to Salvador Dali that you can actually use as putting up magnetic finger puppets and recreate historical scenes or literary scenes. There's just so many ways to use the physical space in your home to teach, again, either formally or informally. You can have educational placemats in your dining room that you purchase or that your child makes and you laminate. You can put up posters or even shower curtains that they sell with educational information or pictures of different types of plants in your bathroom. There's so many creative ways to use your space.
Yeah, Virginia's smiling big time on this. She's actually a Montessori-trained teacher. What you're talking about is tremendously important and valuable for the younger students. They learn most easily when they can coordinate the physical universe with the mental processes that they need to engage in order to learn. In fact, in teaching the sounds of words as a beginning prior step to learning to read, they need to actually manipulate objects that represent the sounds. And in mathematics, they need to get numbers of blocks so they can physically see the quantity that represents the number. One of the great things that we found in our research, trying to teach children mathematics using a blackboard and writing up some squiggly lines and expecting them to get the theory of it, is the tough way to go. The easy way to do it is with physical universe objects, so you get this balance between what does the number two actually represent in the physical universe.
I tutor adults who are working towards their GED, and I do what's called applied math. And my students have asked me to do fractions and ratios and estimating and some other things that, quite honestly, I have not done since I was in school and I don't use on a daily basis. So I actually have had to go and educate myself, where actually we learn together, quite honestly. I tell them, okay, we're going to learn this together. What about the parents who haven't done this stuff for so long that they don't remember how to do it?
That's a great question, and I think what you're doing models what parents can also do. If parents feel comfortable relearning the material along with their children, that's a fantastic way to work, because then their children are actually seeing the process of learning. They're not just having information given to them. Mm. So they're seeing that the parent goes back, perhaps through a math textbook, and looks at the notes at the beginning, looks at the formulas, tries a sample problem, and then goes back to clear up any issues by looking at the notes again and trying another problem. So the child is actually seeing the learning process, which is crucial. If a parent doesn't feel comfortable doing that and doesn't even want to learn the material independently, maybe just feels completely overwhelmed by the material, I think then the way to go is to help your child find other resources that are appropriate. So it may be, and it may be actually that you talk through your child's notes with him. So he sits down, looks through his notebook, and can perhaps figure out how to do something by looking back at his own notes and just having someone there to discuss them with. But otherwise, you can help your child figure out what questions to ask the teacher the next day at school, or you can bring your child to the library and find books that help teach the subject that you're not comfortable in.
Mm-hmm.
There are tons of online resources now. There are videos that show how to learn certain math concepts. You can find online tutorials where someone will walk you through learning fractions. So that's also a fantastic resource.
I see in your book, Marina, in the introduction, the heading, the best tutor I never knew I had. Tell us about that.
Well, when I first started working with students, It was when I was a high school student. The very first time I tutored, I sat down with a high school student, a few years younger than I was, and I really felt like I'd been sitting there before. I had this sense of deja vu. And I knew I hadn't been officially tutored before, and I hadn't worked as a tutor before, and it took me a while to place the feeling. And I finally realized that I actually had people there who supported me the way a tutor did, and who helped me sort through my papers, and who helped me when I had a quiz coming up and talked through material with me. And it was my parents. My parents were the ones who tutored me informally throughout my life, and I just hadn't recognized that before. I think a lot of people have parents who already work with them. Probably anyone who's a parent who's listening to your show is already engaged with their own child this way. So I realized that there are a lot of parents who are already involved with their children, and there are just little ways that they can probably boost what they're already doing.
And I think your book really going to be tremendously valuable in helping them do that. Folks, we're listening to Marina Rubin, who's the author of the book How to Tutor Your Own Child, Boost Grades and Improve a Lifelong Love of Learning Without Paying for a Professional Tutor. And I do recommend you go to her website, marinarubin.com. You can buy it there at Barnes & Noble, etc.
I see Chapter 7 says, How much for an A, the ethical parent tutor? I have to admit that at certain points, my parents would pay us for our A's and our B's. What is your feeling on this?
I personally don't think it's a great idea to pay your child for grades. I do think it's the decision of each individual family, and I've heard valid arguments for why a parent wants to reward their child in some way. But my preference, if you're going to reward a child, is to do it for something that's not a grade, to do it for having accomplished, perhaps graduated from school, so that you're showing that what you really are happy about is that they've gone through a process and they've been working throughout the whole time. So maybe you take them out to dinner when they finish the school year, or if they finish a unit where they're learning about Vietnam, maybe you go to a Vietnamese restaurant to build on what they've been doing in class and to show that you value that they've been learning about that subject. I think that it gets tricky when your child associates learning with a financial reward. I feel like it's putting the wrong idea into their head. So again, it's every parent's decision, but I personally wouldn't recommend it. But I really appreciate the chance to be on your show. It's been great chatting with both of you. And I hope that if anyone has any questions, that they contact me. Everyone's welcome to contact me with thoughts or questions through my website.
Via the website, they contact you via the website. Okay. No particular email address that you want to share with them at this stage?
They're welcome to use my Gmail account, which is Marina K. Rubin. That's MarinaKRubin @gmail.com.
Okay. Or otherwise, your website, which is marinarubin.com.
Exactly.
So thanks for being with us today, Marina. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks. Same here. Thank you so much.
Bye. You've been listening to Roger and Virginia at the Learning Curve. And if you've got any questions you'd like to raise concerning any of our guests or the subjects we've covered, or about helping your child get good grades in schools, don't be bashful about sending us an email at questions@howtolearneasily.com. Next week's subject is to do with kindergarten readiness of your child. We have Barbara Allison, the author of the recently released book, 1-2-3 Kindergarten, Everything Your Child Needs to Learn Before Kindergarten. This is going to be a very important topic for you folk with youngsters ready to take their first step out on the learning curve.